Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy, and for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. 3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. Make sure you send messages to us on Twitter and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. Expected to be joined by Wesley Woodyard, linebacker for the Denver Broncos, and Wesley's going to talk about his season, talk about that magical performance by Tim Tebow last week for the Broncos, and he's got some good things going on with his charity as well, 16 Ways Foundation, so he's going to discuss that as well. We're expected also to be joined by former Major League Baseball outfielder Darrell Hamilton, who will stop on by. He's going to discuss the World Series, the improbable World Series, the improbable St. Louis Cardinals, St. Louis Cockroaches, as I like to call them, and you'll see why in the next couple minutes. And also, we're going to be joined by the great, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. And Willie, we're going to go around the league with Willie, and we're going to get his top five as always. And Willie's out there at Louisiana Tech for the homecoming, reliving some of his memories and some of the great moments in Louisiana Tech football history. So Willie's out there, and we're going to discuss the NFL with Willie Rofe. So make sure you stick around. We got a great show planned for you today. And I want to go and start with the World Series now. The St. Louis Cardinals, who knew they could do it? How improbable was it? I mean, the St. Louis Cardinals, a team, here's the math, 10.5 games out in August. A team, 3 games out with 5 to play. A team. That had to go 23-9 over the final 32 games to get into the playoffs. A team down twice in the ninth, down in the ninth, and down in the tenth, in game six, down to their final out. And they find a way to get it done. I'll even go back to the divisional round against the Philadelphia Phillies. Down 2-1, they had to beat Roy Oswalt. They had to beat Roy Halladay, two of the better pitchers in the game, to get to where they needed to go, and they got there. This team could survive anything. I think this team, if a nuclear bomb hit St. Louis, the only thing that would be alive are the St. Louis Cardinals and cockroaches. I mean, this team could survive a nuclear war. I no longer call this team the St. Louis Cardinals. I call them the St. Louis Cockroaches. This team survived everything to get to this point, and they got it done. Beyonce, Kelly, and Michelle have nothing on this Destiny's Child. This is Destiny's Child, the St. Louis Cardinals. It pains me to say it. It hurts me to say it, but reality is reality. Real is real, and credit is due to the St. Louis Cardinals. They deserve the credit for what they did. Improbable. And, I mean, they literally came out of nowhere. They were dead. They were basically dead. And if you're a Texas Rangers fan on here today, I declare that today, Saturday, October 29th, is Hug a Ranger. If you see a Rangers fan, hug them, give them a lot of love, because they will need it. Their second time in a World Series in the last 2 years, back-to-back World Series appearances, and back-to-back losses. That is tough. You had game six where you wanted it. Up two in the ninth, up two in the tenth, and guess what happens at the end? The St. Louis Cardinals find a way to get it done. And David Fries, a guy at one point who thought about quitting the game of baseball in high school, this guy is the MVP of the World Series, was the MVP of the LCS. I mean, this guy, 21 RBI, a new postseason record. It's improbable. Out of everybody, all the people on the St. Louis Cardinals roster, you wouldn't expect David Fries to be the guy that was a big reason why the St. Louis Cardinals have won the World Series. Absolutely improbable. Hate them or love them, the St. Louis Cardinals are your World Series champions. Amazing. Just utterly amazing. What are your thoughts on this World Series, Jeremy?
I'm letting you go. I guess, Paul, you know, baseball, to me, a lot of it has been lost. I think the only thing that was hard for me to swallow was seeing the same colors of the Philadelphia Phillies, but it wasn't the Phillies. And you know, it kind of left me wondering what happened there. If you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan today, you really had to be scratching your head because, I mean, I think top to bottom, the Phillies just had, on paper, they had a much better team than the Cardinals. But you got to really, the MVP of the World Series certainly, you know, it was given correctly. But Game 7, you know, Chris Carpenter, he earned his money, and kudos to him. And it was a good series, but, you know, it was tough, I think, for me and I think for a lot of Philadelphia Phillies fans to watch that World Series.
I mean, it definitely is tough. I mean, no doubt about it, it's tough. But this team, I mean, I got to tip my hat to them. And like the Giants last year, they were the hot ball club. And you look at sports now, you look at the Packers last year, a wild card team, had to go through three different stadiums to get to the Super Bowl and ultimately to win the Super Bowl. They were the hot team at the right time. St. Louis Cardinals, same deal, the hot team at the right time. And they got it done. And you look at it and it's just improbable how they did it. Just absolutely improbable how they did it and with the guys they did it with. Just improbable. I mean, it's amazing. It truly is an amazing story. It's an amazing story for this ball club. I mean, absolutely amazing. Who would have thought that the St. Louis Cardinals, there was no way. There was no way. You thought they were getting out of the first round. No, first of all, there was no way you thought they would even get to the playoffs. Then second of all, there was no way they were beating the mighty Phillies with the four aces. There was no way. Milwaukee, not really surprised, but you thought the magic would end there. Then in a World Series, you thought the magic would end there. You at least thought the magic would end in Game 6, being down two runs in the ninth. And then they come back there, and then being down again, two runs in the 10th, and they come back there. I mean, this is absolutely, positively one of the craziest things I think you'll ever see in sports. The St. Louis Cardinals, a team that just literally came out of nowhere. I mean, not only... I mean, they were 10.5 back with 31 to play. But then you look at the math even more, three games back with five to play. And they
done. Paul, I guess, too, you wonder, and it's certainly baseball has, I think, been with – lately, it seems the hottest team walking into the postseason has had the most success, and the Yankees and the Phillies had to, I think, really be kicking themselves. I think the Rangers belong there, and I'm still having a hard time. I have to admit, if you're the Rangers, you really talk about, like you said, you really need to put your thinking cap on and wonder what just happened to you. I mean, this was a foregone conclusion. I think for a lot of people, and here they are a day after really just, I mean, I would think they're probably still crying. I agree with you needing a hug. It's hard for me to watch this series. Even against the Brewers, you know, the Cardinals, they handled the Phillies, and that's the head-scratcher in all of this, is how the Phillies really were manhandled by, a team that really should have lost then against, if you think about it, Milwaukee.
I mean, I don't know if they manhandled the Phillies per se. They beat the Phillies, and then they beat the Phillies in a hard-fought five-game series. I mean, I don't think they manhandled the Phillies per se. I think they beat them. They just beat them, and they got a great. Roy Halladay was great in Game Five, but Chris Carpenter was greater. You give up one run, and that's you expect to win that game. But Chris Carpenter and the St. Louis Cardinals, they shut the Phillies down, and they got a lot of great defensive performances in that particular game, too, in Game 5. And then you just go last night. I mean, you just knew. After Game 6, you just knew that the Cardinals were Destiny's Child. I mean, you just knew it. You don't come back from that. They came back from the dead twice in one night. They came back from the dead twice in one night. That doesn't happen very often. And again, I said it before, I'll say it again. If a nuclear bomb were to hit St. Louis, the only thing that would survive is Busch Stadium and the St. Louis Cardinals and cockroaches. That's it. That's the only thing that would survive. This team survived everything to get to this point. Absolutely amazing how they got to this point. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. It's a head-scratcher. I don't have hair, so I'm scratching my scalp right now. It's definitely a scalp-scratcher if you're talking to Paul Ginn, who was bald. I mean, this is crazy.
No, but I know it's early, and I think it's worth, you know, at least getting one the quick shock out there. And they asked it last night of they certainly asked that Albert Pujols right away, do you see yourself coming back here? And so I'll ask you, Paul, I mean, do you see him coming back there?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He's going to want his money. He is going to want his money. You wonder, does winning the World Series change anything either way? I mean, does it help the Cardinals or does it hurt the Cardinals? Does Albert say, you know what, I got a ring again with the Cardinals. You know, I've done everything I need to do here. I'm going to go to the highest bidder in this situation. Could it be, you know what, I love this city. I love this team. I love being around La Russa and the guys. Does he stick around in St. Louis? I don't know. I mean, I think the question, it's at this point, I just don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with Albert here.
When a hand can be raised, can it not, Paul, to say that, you know, if you're the Cardinals now, I mean, and he leaves and it's about money, doesn't that then give you the right to go back and say, well, you know what, I mean, basically we tried, we throw an offer out there that's fair, that's maybe of market value, but now there are other teams, because he wins the World Series, that it gives him the right to say, you know what, we don't need him as much.
Well, I mean, you look at that lineup, they need Albert Pujols. But again, you wonder, they don't win the World Series without Albert Pujols. I mean, you look at it, that guy, he had the three home runs in the one game there. I mean, the guy was amazing in that game. He didn't do much afterwards, but he was amazing in that particular game. You know, he was absolutely amazing in that particular game. We'll go back to the baseball now, but let's bring in now one of the greatest offensive linemen ever played a game, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm in Ruston, man. Going to a homecoming. And, they got me and Bradshaw and Fred Dean up at the stadium July 8th. So it's going. We got San Jose State today. So I'm looking forward to seeing some good football today.
And, I mean, it,
well,
it must be good to be Willie Brown.
That's probably the conference D-liner that I played with me over here.
It must be good to be Willie Rolfe right now. I mean, you're on top of the world. You're at Louisiana Tech. You were the man there.
Yeah, I had a good career here. We had a good program and had a lot of fun. So, just looking forward to getting back.
And speaking of a good college career, a great college career, Tim Tebow. I mean, Tim Tebow last week, he looked horrendous for much of the game against the Miami Dolphins. Then he pulled a rabbit out of a hat and led his team to an improbable comeback. I still don't think he's an NFL quarterback. But how would you rate Tebow's performance on Sunday?
I don't think it was that good. I mean, late in the game, he made a couple plays late in the game to help him win the game. But other than that, he had a tough time. I mean, he didn't throw the ball well. You know, he made some plays late in the game. Okay.
And he
made some plays late in the game, but you know, it was a tough performance. It's gonna take a while. He's gotta get some time in practice. They gotta figure out what kind of system they're gonna do with him, you know, to make it work. I mean, but it's gonna take some time to put the right system in place around him and make sure he's got the right players around him to make it work.
Is there a system that can work for this guy? I mean, his mechanics are awful.
If there is a system that can work, he's going to have to be able to throw the football down the field and stretch the field some. I mean, we know what he can do with his legs. We know he's a kind of an athlete. He can sell plays. But he's going to have to learn how to read coverages, and he's going to have to be able to make some plays throwing the football down the field.
And that's one thing. I mean, late in the game, he did prove that he could make some plays. I just cannot see him doing this on a consistent basis. I just can't do it. I don't think he throws the ball well enough for him.
Well, Willie, sure. But let me ask you something, Willie. In regards to, I see him almost, especially because of the height, and he reminds me a little bit, you know, of a poor man's Doug Flutie, in that he is extremely, extremely mobile for a quarterback his size. When he is, you know, out of the pocket, he's deceptively fast, and I mean, he can take hits. He was a great runner at Florida.
He was an outstanding runner at Florida, and they had a good system around him. But you know, are they going to be able to? He's not going to be able to run the ball like he did in Florida. He's going to have to sit back. Look what Cam Newton's doing now. Cam Newton's throwing the ball down the field. He's bigger. You know, Cam Newton's got a big arm. He's throwing the ball down the stretch of the field. The threat of the run will always be there, but he's going to have to turn into somewhat of a drop-back quarterback, Dick Campbell. So it's just going to be interesting to see how this progresses during the year. But I think they have a rude awakening with Detroit coming to town. But Tim Tebow might have some tricks up his sleeve this week. We don't know.
I think they lose against the Lions. I don't think they'll be able to score enough.
But I don't know how bad it is. The Lions need to just play football, and Sue and those guys need to stop being tough guys and just worry about playing football.
Right. You're referring to Adamican Sue and that whole situation with the Falcons. And you look at it, Willie, last week another quarterback made his debut, albeit in the second half for the Oakland Raiders, Carson Palmer. He didn't look good, 3 interceptions in the second half. He said later that he knew about 15 plays. Should we overreact to Carson Palmer's performance, or should we just say, you know what, that's just one game?
Well, no, it's just one game. He got in there late, you know, didn't get a full week's work, went out there in a tough situation. He's got to get his timing down with the receivers. He's got to be out there in practice throwing the ball. You know, he's probably been throwing the ball some, but it's a lot different than throwing in your backyard or in high school and throwing in the NFL with these guys, you know, they've been playing 5-6 weeks, and they jumped a couple routes on him, and it turned out to be a tough day for him. So I look for him to get better as the year goes on, but they got a bye week right now, so he should be better in the next 2 weeks.
And we look at it now, Willie, the Detroit Lions, the team you just talked about a moment ago, 5-0 at one point, now they're 5-2, back-to-back losses against the 49ers and the Falcons. Matthew Stafford limping around. Teams are looking like they're able to run the ball effectively against this ball club. When it's all said and done, what does Lions team turn this thing around?
I think they're still gonna be a good team. I think they still should make the playoffs. I mean, they got enough talent to make the playoffs. I don't know how far they'll go, but they haven't even played. You're right, they haven't even played Green Bay yet. So,
right.
But Green Bay's gonna try to pass the ball, which would be tougher to do than trying to run the ball on them. Like you said, teams have been effective running the ball, and Green Bay doesn't run the ball. So,
right.
We'll have to see what happens. But it's gonna be interesting to see how it plans out and plans out in that division. I still think they have a chance to make the playoffs.
And I agree with you. I mean, there is still a lot of talent on that roster, and I think they'll ultimately still make the playoffs. But, I mean, there has to be some concern. And what you referred to it earlier, but what do you think about this whole situation at Dominican Sue and all the talking that's going on there with the Falcons and the Lions?
I just think Sue needs to play football. I think Sue needs to just play football. I mean, everybody knows they're tough, and, you know, tough guys in the league don't talk. I mean, they go out there and play every week. You know, they don't need doing all this talking and getting all this stuff, and, you know, but, you know, they're going to be watching him. Hey, if he wants that reputation, you know, if he wants to play against some of them old Bronco lines, some of those lines, and high-low him and do whatever they got to do to slow him down, I mean, you know, back in the day, they would get after him. So, you know, I mean, he don't want to talk too much, and these guys start trying to cut him on the back of the legs and doing stuff that'll hurt him. And, you know, they don't really play football like that anymore. But, you know, teams will start getting keen on him if he makes a lot of plays anyway. But you know, we don't. I mean, offensive lines not too long ago used to play a little dirty.
Isn't a lot of this stuff today somewhat overhyped because of the media? I mean, is what he said. I think a lot of people sometimes today, him now or James Harrison, they say something and it becomes, I think, almost way too overhyped.
I mean, what James Harrison did and all the talking about the commissioner, you know, a lot of these guys are just saying whatever and backtracking on their statements. But, you know, like you said, it's blown out of proportion. You know, a lot of this stuff is blown out of proportion. But I just like to see guys play football and not do all the chatting and doing all the talking.
And then you have Twitter and all the social media out there that people do a lot of talking on there as well. I mean, it's a different world that we live in right now in terms of technology and social media. So I think that changes things as well.
Yes.
We're talking to Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. Willie right now is having a good time on the Louisiana Tech campus, his alma mater, homecoming, and it's good times for him. Willie, a big game in the NFC East tomorrow. You got the Cowboys and Eagles. Cowboys last week, great performance. DeMarco Murray, over 200 yards, and they blow out the Rams. The Eagles coming off a bye, but Andy Reid is 12-0 after the bye week. Plus, to me, the Eagles are the more desperate team. Therefore, I think they get the victory tomorrow. But how do you see this one playing out?
Well, it's going to be a good football game. It's going to be a tough football game. I think the Cowboys got a shot in this game. I think it's going to be a tough game for Philly, but Philly's at home. I would like to see Philly win. It's going to be a tough football game.
And you look at it also in terms of that, the Philadelphia Eagles right now, they're on a 5-game home losing streak. So this team hasn't been playing very well at home.
They need to win, but like I said, I think it's going to be a tough game.
I think it's going to be a very good football game, and ultimately I think the Philadelphia Eagles will get it done. And Willie, another big game, this time in the AFC, the Steelers-Patriots. Tom Brady has been terrific against the Steelers. He's won 5 times at Heinz Field. But the Patriots' defense, not very good against the pass, 32nd against the pass. And we know the Steelers, they have a lot of weapons. will that magic continue for Brady against the Patriots? Will that magic continue for the Patriots, or will the Steelers get it done tomorrow?
I'm predicting the Cowboys, and I'm predicting the Steelers to defend the home court tomorrow.
I like the Steelers tomorrow as well. I do. I think, you know, and then this is a big game in terms of the AFC. I mean, it's right now you look at a Baltimore after that stinker against the Jacksonville Jaguars, you have to say now that the Steelers and the Patriots are probably the two top teams in the AFC right now. And this is for AFC supremacy at this stage of the season. I think whoever wins this football game, I think you can very well say that they're probably the best team in the AFC.
Yes, I agree with you with that statement. And like you said, I just think Steelers going to get up to this game. They got their playoff team. They got a veteran team. And I just think they're going to get up to this game. And they'll play good at home.
They're
playing some real good football.
Well, and one of the things, too, I think that people forget is the prior game already this season. And sometimes I wonder, too, this is a precarious situation now for Baltimore, because coming off of that loss and now playing the Steelers, this is potentially two losses in a row. And now you may have a lot of people saying, you know, what is going to be the situation with their quarterback, and how will they win? You know, even when you go back to the Trent Dilfer days, you're seeing a team now that just seems like offensively they're totally inept.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know, and like you said, it's gonna be a real tough football game. And can they make a guy turn the ball over and do some things? And we'll see what they can do.
And Willie, let's get to your top five now. Last week, you had the Packers 1, Ravens 2, Patriots 3, Lions 4, and the Saints 5. How do you see it this week?
My top five this week: Green Bay, New England, the Saints, Pittsburgh, and Forty Niners
finally cracked your top five after all this time, and I think they had to, especially after the Detroit Lions losing this week and being on a two-game winning streak. The 49ers had to get in, and Baltimore had to get out. I mean, it's inexcusable losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars the way they lost to them.
Yep, and it's going to be Baltimore. They didn't show up. Flacco is what we talked about earlier. Just didn't show up. Just didn't show up and do anything. So it's one of those deals where we got to take him out after that showing by that offense last week. I mean, you got to play better than that against the Jacksonville team. It's been struggling.
Definitely. Willie, it was a pleasure having you, man. Enjoy your time in Louisiana. Have a great time, man. Not too much fun. And we'll do this again next week.
All right, I'm walking around right now here with the tech. We're having a tailgate. We're having a good time. So that's it. I'll talk to you guys next week. And I'll be here.
All right, Willie.
We'll talk about these ticks more.
Okay.
We're going to have some fun out here today.
All right.
I see that. I hear that. It sounds like you're going to have a good old time, man. Take care.
All right.
The great Willie Rofe. I mean, he's having a good old time right there in Louisiana, Ruston, Louisiana, to be specific, as he's with his former Louisiana Tech players. You got Terry Bradshaw in the building, Fred Dean in the building, and so a lot of celebrities, a lot of stars out there. I mean, he's one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever play the game, Willie Rofe, and he's being honored down there, coming on back. It's got to be a good time for him. He's probably got his varsity jacket on somewhere. Somewhere around
Stop
there.
It. Stop it. Dang it.
You look at it now, and go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting. You know, Willie seems to think that Dallas has a good chance in this game, and you bring up an interesting point that there's, you know, some losses you know, at Lincoln Financial Field. And I don't know, Paul. I mean, I look at this game. This is certainly the season here for the Eagles, and it's not exactly a write-off game for either team. And Dallas needs this win too. And I mean, it's going to have a different feel to it. But you know, I wonder now with Michael Vick and the offense getting a little bit, you know, of a bye week, and certainly with the defense going through some troubles and having an extra week here to get things going. If you don't think Michael Vick may have, you know, really benefited, or who benefits the most from getting that extra week? And I think of all the players on the team, yes, Romo was hurt, but I mean, I think it's well established that Michael Vick really needed a week to kind of compose himself, playing injured pretty much all season. And not just injured, I mean, you know, he's playing battered and bruised every game.
Well, I mean, you look at it, I mean, Andy Reid and the Eagles, 12-0 after the bye week. So history tells you that they're pretty good after the bye week. That's what history will tell you. Also, you look at it, history will also tell you that the last five games, the Eagles have been ineffective at home. I mean, they've been 0-5. They've got a five-game losing streak at Lincoln Financial Field. So history tells you that they may struggle there. But you look at this whole situation, this game, to me, it's the Eagles' season. The Cowboys are 3-3. They can afford to lose this game. The Eagles cannot. And to me, with that being said, the Eagles are the more desperate team. This is their season. They have a big three-game homestand coming up, a big three-game homestand. And to me, this three-game homestand will tell you a lot about how the Philadelphia Eagles season is going to end and going to be in a lot of ways. Will the season end not in the playoffs, or will the season end in the playoffs or in the Super Bowl somewhere? This three-game stretch will tell you a lot. Cowboys, Bears, and the Cardinals. And you look at it, I mean, they're all at home, but the Cowboys and the Bears game, that's going to be two tough football games. The Cardinal game, they can get done, and they will get done. But they have the Cowboys, the Bears, and the Cardinals. That's a tough three-game stretch. But to me, that's your season. You get by those 3 weeks, you're 5-4, and now your head is above water. You're 5-4 going against the New York Giants the following week. So if you get by the three-game win streak, you have the Giants the following week at New York. It's going to be a big game. But at that point, you're above water at 5-4. And you look at it, I mean, Dallas, Chicago, Arizona, those three games at home. Then you got the Giants on the road. And then you come back home to the New England Patriots. It's a pretty tough five-game stretch there. That's a pretty tough five-game stretch. But if they can get by that stretch and still in good shape record-wise, you got to go to at Seattle, a game you can win and should win. You go at Miami, a game that you should win, and then you have the New York Jets at home. So you got three winnable games if you can get by this big five-game stretch with the Cowboys, starting tomorrow with the Cowboys. Then you have the Bears, the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Patriots. That's a big five-game stretch, and I'm looking at that, and to me, that five-game stretch, you have to at least go 4-1. I don't think 3-2 cuts it. I mean, I don't think 3-2 cuts it. I think you got to be 4-1 in that five-game stretch. You do. Otherwise, it's going to be tough. It is going to be tough. But they can do it. They can do it. And everybody talks about the Giants, and right now the Giants are on top of the NFC East. But they got a tough schedule as well down the stretch. A very tough schedule. After they play the Dolphins, the Giants go to New England. They go to San Francisco. They play the Eagles at home. Then they go to New Orleans. They got the Packers at home. Then they go to Dallas. So after they play the Dolphins this week, they have a tough five-game stretch. And that should tell you a lot about the New York football Giants. At New England, at San Francisco, have the Eagles at home, at New Orleans, and they have the Packers at home. That's a tough five-game stretch. But if the Eagles can get through this three-game stretch here at 5-4, they are in good shape. But if they don't, if they lose one of these games in this three-game homestand, I think it might be safe to say that the Philadelphia Eagles will be sitting home. They may not make the playoffs.
Paul, at this point in the season, you really want to focus on, playoffs for this team?
Well, you have to. I mean, this team, you have to talk playoffs. This team was built to make the playoffs and make a Super Bowl run. So anything other than that, it's useless. It's uncivilized, as they would say in the old right guard commercials. I mean, anything other than the playoffs is uncivilized. This team was built to win a Super Bowl. This team was built to win the Super Bowl. At 2-4, you're not in good shape. You have to win these three games. You have to win these three games at home. You have to take care of home field. You got to take care of it. And you got to win those games. You got to win those games. If you don't win these games, it could be over in terms of a playoff berth. You got to win all three of these games and get your head a little bit above water here. You got to. I can't see. I mean, I guess theoretically they still could make the playoffs if they lose one of these three games. But these are big. These are absolutely big. And I see this team responding, and I see this team responding very well, starting with the Dallas Cowboys tomorrow night at Lincoln Financial Field. I look for the Philadelphia Eagles to get that victory and get it done. I look for Michael Vick and the Eagles. LeSean McCoy is running the ball very well, but the Cowboys, they do stop the run very well. They're number one against the run in this league. So they stopped the run pretty well. They stopped the run pretty well. Not pretty well, very well. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I think the Eagles will get it done, and I think mainly they'll get it done because they are the more desperate team. And I look at these two teams. These are two very talented football teams, but two teams that have been snake bitten by turnovers at the wrong time. Tony Romo's turnovers at the wrong time, just against the Jets and against the Lions, and then you got the Eagles. Michael Vick's four interceptions against the Bills, and then you have Macklin's fumble against the 49ers. So this team has turned the ball over at inopportune times, and again, turnovers are correctable. These are two very evenly matched football teams. Talent-wise, I think the Cowboys are a very talented football team. I really do. But I think the Eagles are a more talented football team, and I think the Eagles will win the game tomorrow.
They certainly are. They certainly are more talented. I think my fear right now with this Eagles team is I just think that this is going to be an off year for them. I think I'm sold on the fact that they will, whether it happens this game, this season for them, they went after great long-term pieces, but they still haven't addressed the offensive line. They still haven't addressed their linebacking corps. And until they really do solidify those two things, or Andy Reid for the first time in a long time, if really ever in his tenureship here with the Eagles, can do that, I don't see this team recovering.
Well, I've been on this air for the last few weeks, obviously disagreeing with that point that you just made. Yes, the linebackers, they are a little flawed. Yes, the offensive line, you can make an argument that it's a little flawed there as well. But you look at their last performance, the defense and the offensive line. The defense was stellar against the Redskins. The one problem that the defense has been having is stopping the run, and they did it. They stopped the run against the Redskins. They shut that run game down. One thing, the offensive line has been, they've had trouble protecting Michael Vick. They protected him pretty well against the Washington Redskins. And, by the way, LeSean McCoy had a great game on the ground, over 100 yards. So the two things that you mentioned, defense and linebackers being a part of that, and the offensive line, they have turned that around. Their last game, they turned that around. And granted, you look at the Redskins now, I guess you could say it was against the Redskins, because the Redskins are 3-3, and they look like they're coming back to the pack. They are who we thought they were, the Washington Redskins, and it looks like they're turning into that. They're coming back. They're coming back to the pack. But you again, I just say this again about the Eagles. I said it earlier in the year, and I'll say it now. This was a team that they brought in a lot of free agents. That takes time to gel. They didn't have the opportunity of minicamp, OTAs, training camp. They didn't have that opportunity to gel. So now they're gelling on the fly. The talent will come together.
Paul, every
offensive
team.
Line is getting healthier now. Jason Peters is back, not arguably. That's their best offensive lineman. So they're getting him back. They're getting him back. And now hopefully this offensive line can get some continuity and, again, ultimately continue to progress the way they progressed against the Washington Redskins. They were very effective against the Washington Redskins.
But every team has to deal with that. I think that it's a little bit tough for me to agree with that. Every team in the league, Paul, had to deal with the same, shortened OTAs and the same.
Agreed.
So I think if you look, though, at the talent of this team, where Michael Vick is getting hurt the most is same problems, really, he had in Atlanta. He doesn't have an offensive line. And overall, I mean, really, yeah, DeSean Jackson is a great receiver, but he doesn't really have a whole core of great receivers. I mean, he has DeSean Jackson, and from there, I think the drop is pretty large. I think Macklin is not a real number two in this league. I think he's probably a solid number three.
And I will disagree with you, and I think the numbers – probably will disagree with you as well. I mean, you look at this team. In terms of the wideouts, I think arguably, you're looking at these wide receivers, this is arguably one of the better wide receiver cores in the game of football. I mean, you look at the Packers, that's the best. You look at the Steelers, I mean, that's a very good wide receiving core there. But you look at this Eagle team. This is a very good wide receiving core. Jeremy Macklin is not a number three wideout. He is a legitimate number two, number one wideout in this league. He's legitimate in my mind. He's very legitimate. I mean, you look at his performance these first three games. I mean, 37 catches, close to 500 yards, and three touchdowns. Obviously, it's been more than three games. It's been six games. But you look at him, the guy has been getting it done thus far this season. He really has. He made some bad plays there in some games, but you look at it, the guy, and let's look at last year. I mean, he caught 70 balls last year, close to 1,000 yards receiving, and 10 touchdowns. So that's not numbers of a third wideout. That's a solid number two, if not a number one wide receiver. And talking about DeSean Jackson now, you look at DeSean Jackson, he's one of those guys. In a lot of ways, he's a weird guy in some respect. He doesn't catch a lot of balls, and it's kind of hard to say that he is a number one in some respect because what he does is different than so many wide receivers in this game. I mean, he's a big play. He's all about the big play. And you look at last year, he only caught 47 balls. But you look at the numbers, over 1,000 yards receiving, and six touchdowns to go with that. So the numbers are a little weird, but you look at 2008 and 2009, both 62 catch seasons. 2008 was his rookie year, but 2009, 62 catch season, close to 1,200 yards receiving, and nine touchdowns. The guy to me, and you look at even this year, 24 catches, 456 yards, 19 yards per catch. So the guy, to me, these are two very good receivers, and Jason Avant is a very underrated receiver for this team. And then you add in Brent Celek, who is a very good tight end, and McCoy out of the backfield, and Steve Smith is also still on this roster as well. So to me, I disagree with that comment 100%. This is a very good – Michael Vick has a lot of weapons. And these are a lot of weapons. There's quarterbacks in this league who would die for these weapons. You think Donovan McNabb would love to have these weapons in Minnesota? He would die for these weapons. Tim Tebow, you think he would love to have these weapons in Denver? He would die for these weapons. There's a lot of weapons in Philadelphia, a lot of weapons. So I disagree. Macklin, top-notch receiver. Jackson the same. And Jason Avant, a very underrated third-down receiver. He gets it done as well. The receiving corps in Philadelphia, to me, the tight end, everybody, it's good. It's very good. So I disagree with you there. Totally disagree.
Well, I mean, that's fine, but, I mean, yeah, is Avant you're saying a quality receiver, but, I mean, he can catch the ball, Paul. He, you know, certainly is an NFL receiver, but
we're talking about Avant or Macklin?
Well, Avant, first, Macklin is a number three. I mean, if you look at teams that have, you know,
But his numbers would indicate otherwise.
Paul, teams, no, but if you look at a team that is where the Eagles should have been, compare the number threes and the number twos of the teams where the Eagles should be, basically atop the NFC East and certainly atop the NFC, Macklin is, in my opinion, underperforming. I think they are, and also understand, give me a second, Paul. This is an Andy Reid offense that you know as well as I do is pass happy. That, you know, if you really want to say, who's really making out the worst in this team is LeSean McCoy, who's actually proven to be an incredibly talented receiver who doesn't get the ball enough in this offense. Too much pass.
Well, you can make the argument that he doesn't get the ball enough, but his last game he did carry the ball 28 times, so maybe there's a shift going on there. But I look at it, and I understand you're saying he's pass happy, but the bottom line is, these guys are putting up numbers. They're putting up the numbers. And the numbers would tell you that this team is getting it done. The numbers would tell you that Macklin, last year's numbers would tell you that Macklin was getting it done. I mean, and he's been theoretically the number two wide receiver for the Eagles team the past during his career. He's been the number two guy throughout his career. So the numbers would tell you otherwise. The numbers would disagree with your point. I mean, 3 years in this league, first 2 this is his third year now, but the first 2 years, 56 catches, over 700 yards, 4 touchdowns, and last year, 70 catches, close to 1,000 yards receiving, and 10 touchdowns. So the numbers tell me that this guy is a legitimate number two wide receiver, if not impossible, number one wide receiver. The numbers are telling me it's totally different than what you're saying. The numbers are telling me something totally different. They're telling me something totally different. And
but,
I just
Paul,
think...
If they're telling you so much, then I guess also my question is, then why isn't the team winning?
Well, I mean, I think it's very obvious why the team is not winning. If you turn the ball over a multitude of a bunch of times, you're not going to win football games. If you turn the ball over at the wrong time, if you're running down the field, final drive running down the field, and you get stripped and you lose the football, you're turning the ball over at an inopportune time. If you have the ball in your hand and the ball gets jarred out of your hands and intercepted by the other team, you're turning the ball over at an inopportune time. And you were, while that interception happened, you were on the way moving down the field and you're on the verge of basically tying the game. And that was against the Buffalo Bills. So you look at that, and I say this is a team that, on some level, they made a lot of mistakes. And you can't turn the ball over in the NFL and expect to win against anybody. You don't. It doesn't work that way. And also, I look at this team, and I see another thing that happened was the injuries on Michael Vick against the Falcons, a game where I figured if this team would have had Michael Vick in that game, and I think if they would have had Michael Vick in the whole game against the Giants, they would have won both of those football games there. But that, again, those two games go to the defense. They go to the defense, a defense that has struggled throughout this year. So you want to know why the Eagles are 2-4? Let's look at defense. Let's look at turnovers. And I guess that comes also, let's look at coaching. So to me, those are the three reasons why the Philadelphia Eagles are 2-4. But the reality is turnovers are correctable. That is a correctable thing. That's very correctable. Andy Reid has proven throughout his tenure to be a winner with the Philadelphia Eagles. So you know that his coaching can get better on some level. And obviously what he has done has proven to be great good, very good, because they haven't won a Super Bowl, but it's proven to be very good. And looking at the defense last week, they were very solid against the Washington Redskins, very solid. To me, you look at this whole team, summing this whole thing up about the Philadelphia Eagles, if you look at this team, looking at baseball, looking at the St. Louis Cardinals, looking last year at the Green Bay Packers, looking a couple years back at the New York Giants, teams that were hot at the right time. All you have to do is get into the dance. All you have to do is get into the club. All you have to do is get by the bouncer, and once you're in the bouncer, you're able to make plays. So if you can do that, if you can get by the bouncer and get into the playoffs, if you can get into the playoffs, anything can happen. Anything can happen. And I think you look at this ball club with the talent that's on this roster, with the talent that is on this roster, anything can happen, and that anything could be the Super Bowl, but I think that anything will at least be the playoffs. That will at least be the playoffs. And I want to go now to Chris Cooley, tight end for the Washington Redskins. And Chris Cooley is out for the year for the Redskins, a knee issue. And Chris Cooley, in a lot of ways, he blamed the lockout. He's saying that he was a casualty of the lockout. The reason that he is he's out for the year is he was not able to be around team doctors the way he wanted to. And you look at it, you look at the whole Peyton Manning situation. Maybe if he was around his team doctors, he could have got his surgery a little earlier and could have avoided missing darn near the whole season. So you look at it, you look at the whole situation, Chris Cooley out for the year, Peyton Manning pretty much out for the year. Those guys are saying they're casualties of the lockout. And you look at post-lockout football, I tell you one thing, the defenses are definitely behind. The tackling has been atrocious. I'll tell you that. It's been bad. The tackling has been beyond bad so far throughout this season. Is he a casualty of the lockout? I guess if he says it, I guess he could be. But, I mean, the injuries was something I think we should expect to see a lot of because of the lockout and because of guys maybe not staying in the type of shape that they normally do when they have mini camps and OTAs, when you have that guy kind of standing over your back. You know, you put guys on their own, and sometimes they get a little lax with certain things. And then also with the lockout, guys were not able to be around team doctors, and so that may have helped hurt their situations in terms of rehabbing and getting themselves right for the season. So, I mean, I guess theoretically Chris Cooley says he is a casualty of the lockout, and maybe he is. I mean, maybe he is, but I think, you know, a lot of people are casualties of the lockout. I think a lot of free agents now who are still unsigned are casualties of the lockout. I mean, I think a lot of people are just – it's just the nature of the situation. What's your thoughts on this, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, that was interesting because I was letting you kind of go on and on. I wanted to give you the floor because we talked about this a lot in the off season and how this is going to play out. And now you also have to remember, Paul, look at what's going to go on now, you know, moving forward for basically the next 10 years, which are less and less structured workouts for these professional athletes and theoretically more and more. You don't want to certainly call it free time. I mean, they're expected to, you know, to be ready to play, but less structured workouts. And the athletes said it was good for them because it's going to let them heal. And I mean, I guess the question then is that really what's going to be best for them when and if they do get injured? And you say that mainly because, well, here you have an athlete saying that if he was around the team doctors, that this may not and would not have happened. And then so ultimately, you know, you really think to yourself and you look at it and you say, was this, is this, what's best? You know, and the answer then really, it looks like not really. It looks like this could be, of the deal, I mean, this could be something that now players, maybe they think about, you know, oh, you know, we don't want to, we want, you know, a break from the off season. We want to be able to spend more time with our family or more time, you know, not these breaks of going in and staying out, going in, staying out. But here you certainly now have, for the first time ever, in the next 10 years, it's a new world where these players are going to be held a lot more accountable. And we saw very quickly what happened when they knew all offseason that, you know, ultimately, if there was going to be a season, that certainly the players would need to be in shape. And many players that were injured and a lot of what we saw, Paul, you know, you and I said, and it was very true, that unfortunately these players and what was happening was very clear that, you know, when you're away from the team, away from those doctors, those professionals, it's not that easy.
And it's tough. I mean, it's definitely tough. A tough situation with all that. I mean,
my thing is, Paul, like, really, if you look at it, is that really what's best for the team?
And you're right. I mean, you look at the whole situation. I mean, it's unfortunate, obviously, but you knew going into this thing that you would see a lot of this stuff. You knew that going into this season, you would see a lot of injuries. And early on, we were seeing a lot of people rupturing their Achilles. You saw a lot of Achilles injuries early on here, and you're still seeing them. But, I mean, it's a tough situation. It's definitely a tough deal for these guys not having that full off season to get their bodies right and get into proper football shape. And then there's in shape and there's football shape. You know, they're two different animals in a lot of ways. There's football shape and there's regular in shape, you know. And, again, two different animals. Definitely two different animals in a lot of ways. But you look at it, Chris Cooley, I guess on some level, he says he's a casualty of the lockout. And maybe he is. Maybe he is, and it's unfortunate. It's definitely an unfortunate thing for that to happen. And, you know, Peyton Manning and his situation, unfortunate. Definitely an unfortunate thing. Definitely.
Well, but
truly,
but,
truly
Paul,
an unfortunate
thing. Let me ask you, Paul, do you really believe that with Peyton Manning it would have been any different?
I can't say it really would have been any different, but you still have to look at it. I mean, it's a serious neck injury. So I don't know how different it would have been, but you never know. I mean, he did say that if he would had the time, maybe with team doctors and trainers and whatnot, that it could have been a different story. But we don't know. We just don't know. And hopefully, I mean, we'll see what happens moving forward. But guys are going to continue to go down. It's just the nature of the situation. It truly is the nature of the situation. And speaking of that, you had reports coming out this week about T.O., Terrell Owens. There were reports that there was a possible suicide attempt earlier this month, earlier in October. And his publicist recently came out and said that it was not true. There was not a suicide attempt by T.O. Basically, essentially, it was an accidental overdose in a lot of ways. But they're saying that it was not a suicide attempt. Or was it over? Actually, they're saying, I'm looking at the one that happened in 2006. This time, the publicist is saying that it was not an attempt of suicide or an overdose of pills. That's what the publicist is now saying about this whole situation with T.O., and she also said reports of the 911 call are misleading and they are not factual. So you look at this whole situation with Terrell Owens and that whole thing with him, and you just hope that it's not true. You hope that it wasn't a suicide attempt. You hope that it wasn't a cry for help, if you will. You hope it was none of those things. You really do. But, I mean, T.O. right now, You look at him. He's having some issues financially. You look at T.O. right now. No team wants him. He tore his ACL in April. He tore his ACL, and now he's rehabbing. He had situation. He had a workout, which was aired by NFL Network, but no team showed up. No team showed up. So, I mean, that has to be a pretty humbling situation. So, I mean, it's an interesting situation with T.O. And you look at the guy, he's loud, he's confident, brash, but the confidence and the cockiness, that could be all surface. It could be to hide something deeper and bigger that's going on in his life. I look at T.O. And a lot of times he says he loves me, some me. But if these reports are true in terms of a possible suicide attempt, then to me, I have to say T.O. hates him some him. And and he's going through a tough time. But let's be clear about that again. He's not playing in the league. It doesn't seem like anybody wants him at this point. Tore his ACL. He's having some financial issues. And it's a tough time for him. And you go back to his incident back in 2006 where there was also a report there was a possible suicide attempt. But, again, he said it was a bad reaction to painkillers at the time. I mean, that's what he says. He says that I guess I have to believe him on some level. But it's a sad situation with T.O. And you hope, I mean, I hope he does catch on somewhere around. I hope he does get another shot. And I think there are teams that definitely could use a wideout. I mean, Chicago could use him. You look at the Redskins, they could use them. I mean, teams can use them. Teams can use this guy. So we'll see what happens.
Well,
and again, there is a 911 call out there with this whole situation. And so we'll see what happens. And, you know, you look at going through the 911 call real quick, the woman, the operator, asked the woman who was his assistant, she asked her, was it a suicide attempt? And the woman said, yes, I believe so. That's the 911 call. But, again, his publicist has denied that it was a suicide attempt or even an overdose. So who knows? Who knows? But hopefully, again, the guy gets another opportunity. But it's not really good timing for him, considering that he had a workout and no teams showed up, no teams sent a scout. So it's not a good time for T.O. But again, you just hope that he gets another shot, and there are teams that could use him. Definitely could use T.O. Thoughts on T.O., Jeremy?
Well, I mean, again, pause letting you ramble because it was pretty funny. I mean, the suicide stuff, again, is what you're known for. I mean, I feel that if you're an NFL team right now, I agree with you, that pretty much, I think, again, here's the Eagles team. I know it seems weird, Paul. They had him and they dealt with him, but I think he could really help. There's an Eagles team that he could help. Dallas, they had him. He could help them. You talk about San Francisco. All the injuries with their receivers, he can help them. I mean, listen, there's a lot to say about T.O., but when it comes to the guy on the field, he played incredibly well last year.
Let me stop you for a second. Dallas does not need him. I think they're good with Dez Bryant and Miles Austin and Jesse Holley and those boys. They're okay. Jason Witten, they're okay in Dallas. San Francisco, I would not bring him into that situation. He's not going to go back to Dallas and San Francisco. I don't see that happening. Both situations, it didn't work out there for him. And both have Philadelphia, he's not going there. It won't happen. Eagles don't need him. The Eagles do not need Terrell Owens. Not at all. They have enough weapons. But I think you look at Chicago, a team that could use a wideout. They could use a wide receiver in Chicago. The Redskins, Santana Moss is out for an extended period of time. They could use him there. He could be valuable there. I mean, there are places that could use the services of Terrell Owens. there are places that Terrell Owens would be welcomed in. Well, I don't know if he'd be welcomed in, but there are places that could use him. There are places that could use him, definitely. Definitely use him. You could even look at Minnesota, a team that could use another wideout. So there's teams out here that could use it. Tennessee, Kenny Britt's out for the year. They could use him. They could use Terrell Owens. So you go down, there are teams that could use him. But you have this report of a possible suicide, and this is the second time this has happened. And then you have the workout, someone showed up. You have his personality and the way he's acted over the past, throughout his whole career. Teams don't want to deal with that. And he's able to talk and do all the stuff that, you know, you're able to talk and teams are willing to deal with all that talking and all the other stuff that comes with T.O. when you're producing. But now, teams don't need you as much as you need them. T.O. needs the NFL more than the NFL.
But Paul, who agreed? But I'm going to say, and so I guess my question is then, why wouldn't you, if you're a team, you know, if you're, I'm serious, 49ers, for example, why wouldn't you want him?
Why would you bring him back into that situation? I mean, the 49ers dealt with T.O. I think it's a situation, been there, done that. You brought up Dallas
on.
As well.
Dallas and the Eagles, I'm telling you, only because you think they have great receivers. I think that they don't. Let's look at, for example, look at the Giants, the New York Giants, the Jets.
Don't need them. Don't need them.
You're nuts, Paul. You're nuts.
Victor Cruz, you have Hakeem Nicks, who's a star. I mean, Hakeem Nicks is a stud for the New York Giants. They don't need him. You look at Mario Manningham playing some decent football.
Tennessee,
Victor Cruz. They do not need T.O. They don't need T.O. And the Cowboys don't need T.O. either. These teams don't need T.O. Why would you want to bring in T.O.? Why would you want to bring in all the stuff that comes with T.O.? Why would you need that? You don't need it. You don't need it. You just don't need it. I mean, the guy's coming off an ACL injury. An ACL. He's coming off an ACL.
What does it matter?
An ACL.
What's your risk?
He's coming off an ACL.
What's your risk?
Let's look at history. History would tell you your risk would be what happened in Philadelphia. The whole McNabb T.O. thing. Okay. History would tell you your risk would be what happened in San Francisco. Garcia T.O. History would tell you your risk would be what happened in Dallas. History would tell you that your risk would be what happened in Cincinnati. They weren't overly happy with his performance there either. I mean, he put up numbers, but he was still, according to some reports, a divisive figure in the locker room. So your risk is, okay, you bring him into a New York Giants team that's 4-2 on top of the NFC East. He comes in there to doing I love me some me and all this other stuff T.O. does, and he blows the whole situation up. I mean, is it worth it? He's not worth it.
Yes.
He's not worth the headache. He's not worth the possible headache. Do I think T.O., I think at his core, I think T.O. is a good guy. I think T.O. is a good person. But I think T.O. has some issues. And I always say this. I got a lot of things on my mind. You got a lot of things on your mind. And a lot of people have a lot of things on their mind. But guess what? Some things are meant to stay in the mind, and some things are meant to come out the mouth. At a certain age, you have to realize what is meant to come out the mouth and what is meant to stay in your mind. T.O., unfortunately, more often than not, has not lived by that. He has not lived by that more often than not. Instead of keeping things in his head, things tend to drift down to his mouth and come out of his mouth. It might be the truth, but there is a time and a place to say the truth. And unfortunately, T.O. has not, the man is 37 years old. At that point, you have to be able to figure out or understand that, guess what? Yes, being true to yourself, I guess on some level means saying what comes to your mind because that's what you always did. But if that's what you always did, and somehow it always messes up or blows up in your face, or there always is a controversy around you, then you need to make a change. You need to make a change. And making a change means, guess what? Keeping your mouth closed at certain times in life. You're not on top of the world like you were before. You're not the elite receiver that you once were. So guess what? You have to humble yourself a little bit. You can't be that brash guy that you were in Philly. You can't be that guy that you were in San Francisco. You can't be that guy you were in Dallas. You can't be that guy anymore if you want a job in this league. And there are teams, talent-wise, that could use your services. But there are a lot of risks that come with Terrell Owens. So with all that being said, would I like to see Terrell Owens get another chance? Yes. But if I was an NFL GM, would I give Terrell Owens another chance on my roster? I don't think I would. I don't think I would take that chance. If you're a coach, would you want to bring in a guy like T.O., a guy that could divide your locker room? History has shown us that he has a way of dividing locker rooms. Fair or unfair, history has shown us that. And then I didn't mention the thing in Dallas with him and Jason Witten. And that whole situation with Witten, Owens, and Romo, and how Owens was saying that Romo was throwing the ball to Witten more than him, or looking for Witten more than him because of Witten and Romo's relationship off the field. They're close friends. To me, history tells us this. T.O. is just not worth the risk. And I said it before, I'll say it again. Oh, by the way, he's coming off an ACL injury, an injury that many believe is a two-year injury. He's coming off an ACL injury, an ACL injury.
Well, I mean,
that's
Paul,
big.
But you don't. Well, listen, you and I can go back and forth. I'm letting you have the floor because I think. It's certainly important to note that at his age and that injury that, yeah, I mean, you're not getting Terrell Owens. I think that's really, you know, T.O.'s biggest, I will say, I think if T.O. has to reconcile anything, that it should be that, you know, he is not going to ever be Terrell Owens again. I mean, can he maybe come back to being a possession type, you know, a big possession receiver, middle of the field guy? Sure. I mean, would it be safe to assume that T.O.'s got to kind of rebalance himself? Yeah. And I think a lot of teams, I will say I'm mildly surprised that some of the teams, and I mentioned a few of them, I think Houston, I think Detroit, I think a lot of teams to take a chance on this guy, he's a desperate man. And I think, it was made a fool of by that team in the Arena League or whatever league it was over the week that got themselves on every, you know, Sports Center and Comcast Sports Net across the country by offering him a contract that so embarrassed him that his agent had to pretty much defuse it. And so I think you're seeing a guy who's on his last leg.
But it might be a situation where you're going to have to make a decision like that, where maybe you got to go to Canada. Or maybe you have to go to the Arena League. Maybe you got to go to a place, the UFL.
Paul, you remember
maybe you have to go to one of those places to show people that you still have it.
No, we were on the airway a couple of weeks ago, and you know as well as I do, Paul, that you know even great running backs who have offers to go you know up to Canada, they're not going. It's tough. I mean, if you're an All Pro, and certainly Terrell Owens is arguably potentially has numbers for the Hall of Fame. That's tough.
He's a Hall of Famer.
And to end your career in Canada is a little bit it's questionable.
Well, it's not necessary. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Paul, it's questionable.
But it's not necessarily ending your career in Canada per se. It's using that situation to possibly get another opportunity. possibly get another opportunity. So you're using that situation to show GMs around the league, coaches, front office men around the league that you can still play in this league. And I think that's what he would use those situations to show a team that, you know what, I am worth the risk. I am worth the risk. And a guy that is similar to T.O. is Allen Iverson in some respect. I mean, same situations. Guy, another guy who wants to get back into the NBA if there will be an NBA season this year. The NBA has canceled all the games through November. They still haven't worked out their little situation. Hopefully they will, but it's not looking good right now. But they have made progress. But, you know, Allen Iverson, a guy that he's talking about, he wants to make a return to the NBA. He wants another opportunity. But history has shown us when Allen Iverson that there's a lot that comes with him. Hey, don't get me wrong. I love AI Allen Iverson. So let me put that out there right now. But the reality is, at this point in his career, maybe he's a bench guy. Maybe he's a 6'7" guy in this league, 6'7" man in this league. Maybe that's what he is at this point. But you look at AI, and history has shown us that in Philadelphia you had the situation where he clashed oftenly with Larry Brown, and he had a lot of issues, some off-the-court issues in Philly, and you know, a lot came with Allen Iverson. A lot came with him. But the reality is, when you're not as good as you once were, people are not willing to deal with you. And to me, I equate it to this. You have a beautiful woman out there, very beautiful, but she has an awful attitude. What happens when that girl gets a little ugly? Are you going to want to deal with that attitude? No. No, you will not. Because she is not worth the headache anymore. She is not as pretty as she once was, so she is not worth dealing with. And that's the situation with T.O., and that is the situation with Allen Iverson. At one point, they were the beautiful woman. They were that beautiful woman that everybody loved. But she had an awful attitude, but guess what? She was good-looking. She looked great. Have you seen her? She's beautiful. But guess what? The attitude is not right. The attitude is just not good. But guess what? You look past the attitude because of the beauty. And that's what teams did with T.O., and that's what teams did with Allen Iverson. You just look the other way because she's beautiful. But guess what happens now? You're not always going to be beautiful forever, and you're not always going to be a superstar in the NBA forever. So at some point, the demand for you because of your attitude goes down. And in a lot of ways, that's what's happening with T.O., and that's what's happening with Allen Iverson. Just like T.O., even more so than T.O., I hope Allen Iverson gets another opportunity. I really do. I really hope he gets another opportunity. I really do. I know there was a recent article
Paul, I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, is that really, like, getting here's another guy. What team's really going to take a chance for him? Is this going to be Savion Iverson, and we had Save McNabb? Are you going to ruin another person's life and career?
Well, I mean, again, I want Iverson to get another chance. If it takes a song for me to get Allen Iverson another opportunity, I'll write it, I'll record it, and I'll put it out there. I mean, whatever I have to do to give Allen Iverson another opportunity, I will do it. But the reality is this. You have to look at it this way. Looking at it this way, he ain't pretty anymore. T.O. ain't pretty as they once were. So guess what? You're not willing to deal with the attitude. You're just not going to deal with it. And yeah, I know I'm not. I wouldn't. I wouldn't deal with the attitude of a woman with an awful attitude, but then years later, I mean, you know, a woman has a beautiful, she's pretty in the face, but awful attitude, and years down the line, she's not as pretty as she once was, and she still has that same attitude. Guess what? I'm walking the other way. And I think that's what teams are doing now. They are walking the other way. They're walking the other way, fair or unfair. It is what it is, and that's just the reality of the situation. I would love to see T.O. to get another shot. I would love to see Allen Iverson get another shot. But guess what? Just like that pretty woman with the ugly attitude, you don't want her anymore. You're not going to want those guys anymore. you're not going to want to deal with it because they're not as pretty as they once were. That's life. That's reality. It is what it is. Let's bring in now linebacker for the Denver Broncos, Mr. Wesley Woodyard. Wesley, how are you, sir?
Doing good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing very well. And, Wesley, I know you're doing well. I mean, looking at your team and looking at the game last week, you guys were down 15-0 with 5 minutes left. And Tim Tebow, he pulled the rabbit out of the hat, and he did his things, and ultimately you guys will win 18-15. But be honest with me, Wesley, down 15-0, you had to think the game was pretty much over.
No, I mean, you never want to think a game is over with, but honestly, after, you know, we scored that first touchdown, we knew that our offense had, you know, clicked in. Tebow came to play right then. So, you know, he's always a win. He's always been a winner. He's going to find a way to win, and that's something that's always going to be behind him.
And you saw him creating his magic. When you saw him creating his magic, what was going through your head?
Hey, well, you know, I watched him several times in college, so I already knew what was going on. You know, everything just goes good for the kid when he gets in his zone. So, you know, he definitely was in his zone. I always tell him, you know, it's just like college and it's just like high school. So just go out there and have fun and play, and that's what he did at the end of the game.
And he had a lot of fun, and he did a lot of great things for the Denver Broncos. And Wesley, a lot of people, we talk about Tim Tebow, we talk about the stuff that he can't do, and you got a lot of people out here who do not believe the guy's an NFL quarterback. But like you said, it's just something about this guy that he finds a way to get it done. Well, what is it about Tebow?
He works and he studies harder than anybody I know, you know. He's a true professional when it comes to the game. You know, yesterday everybody was gone. He was still there watching film and going over plays, and I think that's the thing that separates him from, you know, a lot of other players in the NFL. You know, he studies and he loves the game of football, and, you know, wins measure quarterbacks, so, you know, who knows? You know, we'll see where the future leads for him. I think he's going to be a winner, though.
Well, Wesley, can he – I mean – obviously, you know, he's the starting quarterback now for you guys, but can he lead your team in the long term? Is he the long-term answer for this team?
You know, I definitely think he will, you know, and we're going to find out this year, but, you know, my money's on Tim. You know, he has a lot of confidence in himself, and whenever you have a player that has confidence in himself, that brings along great plays, and that's something that he does. He makes plays. He's an all-time gamer, man. He loves the game of football, and he comes ready to play week in and week out.
And you look at that game, and to me, that was a season-saving type of ball game. You lose that game, you're 3 games out of first place. Win, which you guys did. Now you're only 2 games out of first place, and you still have a shot. Well, was that kind of your mindset going into this Dolphin game?
It did. You know, he rejuvenated our team, you know, with that win, and that's something that we needed to do. We needed that to get back on track. And like you said, it saved our season. And hopefully, you know, that was the cornerstone that we needed to get around. So, and we're just ready to play and get another chance to go out there and compete.
We're talking to Wesley Woodyard, linebacker for the Denver Broncos. And, Wesley, I mean, you came into the NFL as a player coming out of Kentucky. Guys like you normally don't make it in the NFL. How'd you do it?
I had a chip on my shoulder. And, you know, I was actually telling some of the rookies the other day that, you know, when I came in, me being undrafted, I didn't have a chance to make a mistake. So you have to take your job serious and come to work to work every day, you know, to give it your all. And that's something that I went to work every day. I have fun. I love the game of football. And when it was time to go, it was time to go. So I just enjoy the game of football, and football has blessed me.
And, Wesley, we look at it right now. You're the special team captain for this ball club. Therefore, you're setting the example for a lot of players on the team. Talk about that responsibility.
It's big, you know, especially when your players, your fellow teammates vote you to be a captain. It's big. You know, sometimes you really don't recognize how much you hold, but my thing is it's easy for me to be myself, and that's what my teammates love, and that's what my teammates feed off. So every day I'm playing, I give it my all. So it's a pretty easy job if you're just being yourself and you're voted a captain.
How about this offseason? Paul and I talked a lot, and certainly, again, this show, with the injuries and this being a very difficult and a different offseason for players, How did your team, you know, handle the offseason? How have you guys handled this new, you know, this the new 10-year regime of the NFL and the Players Association?
Well, only thing we could do, since we didn't have any plays, is just continue to keep our camaraderie, you know, good and just build our relationship with the guys that are on the team. And when they drafted the rookies, we had some people had conversation with the rookies that we drafted them. Basically, we knew when once camp came, you know, we had to hit the field running, and that's something that we had to take advantage of. We couldn't make mistakes like other teams that had already knew their systems.
We're talking to Wesley Woodyard, linebacker for the Denver Broncos. And Wesley, six games into the season, you have 48 tackles. You started a few games for the ball club. How would you rate your play to this point?
I try not to remember, like, look at the good things. I always remember the bad things. So, you know, I'm out there. It's an uphill battle every day to get better, and I think that's something that gives me an edge over most players. I'm always trying to get better. You know, I can always do things, you know, to help my teammates win. So that's my only thing, just to get better every week.
And, Wesley, you guys have a big football game against the Detroit Lions, a team coming into Denver on a two-game losing streak. They got a lot of weapons, Matthew Stafford, Calvin Johnson. What do you guys have to do to slow this ball club down?
We definitely have to take Calvin out of the game and, you know, just make sure we eliminate the big shots down the field between him and Pettigrew, and we're going to have a good game and stop the run most definitely. You know, they got back on track with running the football, so it's going to be a run-stopping game and a deep shot game.
And this is a big game for you guys. I mean, you're two games out of first place, and after winning last week against the Miami Dolphins, you have a shot again.
It is. You know, they're trying to get back on track, and we're trying to make sure we stay on track. So it's going to be a good game to watch. And, you know, my teammates, we've had a good game. I mean, a good week of preparation, and we're just ready to take it to the field and come out with a victory.
And you know, Wesley, I was trolling around on YouTube, and I saw a particular video, you impersonating safety Brian Dawkins. Talk about that.
That's funny, man. You know, the first day Doc came, you know, we asked him about it, and it was up to me. I'm the jokester and the prankster in the locker room, so I had to, you know, for the rookie, show him how to make people laugh. So it was all in fun and games, man. We still laugh to it to this day, and we still watch it every now and then. So.
And how much of a leader is Brian Dawkins? I mean, I'm from the Philadelphia area, so I saw a lot of Brian Dawkins throughout his career. I mean, the guy, the way he acts, it's almost infectious.
It is. You know, it goes much more than just being on the football field when you got a guy like Dawkins. He's our spiritual leader, and he's a good man, like a man role model to follow. So, you know, it always builds camaraderie when you have a guy like Brian in your locker room. And on the field, you know he's going to give it your all. So you definitely don't want to let him down because, you know, he's out there giving his all, putting his body on the line for you. So it's always good to have a guy like that everybody can learn from.
And not just with Brian Dawkins, but certainly, you know, new coach in there this year and a defensive coach in that. How has, you know, especially a guy like Brian Dawkins, who's a hard-nosed defensive hidden safety, and now, like, this defense helped, I think, a younger offense in Denver?
You know, our defense, we get back to the basics. You know, our defensive scheme is just based on really, you know, blitzing them and just pounding our opponent and, you know, getting our offense in good field position, and that's something that our coaches preach. You know, every possession counts, whether they don't score, whether they do score. So, you know, that's something that we always look for when we go on the field. You know, we get the ball back to the offense. You know, they can score in the short field position, and it's going to be hard for any football offensive football team to score, you know, going 90 and 80 yards down the field. So that's something that we try to eliminate.
And you talked about Brian Dawkins being a role model on and off the field. Wesley, you're a role model as well, on and off the field, and you got a big event coming up for your 16 Ways Foundation. You guys got a big dinner coming up this Tuesday in the Denver area. Talk about that.
I do, man. It's going to be me and my teammates are going to be serving dinner, giving back to the fans at Sullivan Steakhouse downtown. It's going to be pretty fun, man. You know, Tim Tebow's coming out, Dawkins, Temp, so it's always good to get us out of our elements and finally our fans can sit down and talk to us and, you know, pick our brains for a little while and see how we really feel about things.
And talk about your 16 Ways Foundation. Talk about the inspiration behind it.
The inspiration behind my foundation really comes from just the community. Where I'm from, the community was everything, and it just everybody's built around the community. I think in today's world, that's where we're lost at. You know, we don't have a good community base that helps everybody raise their child. So it's always good to give back to the youth, at-risk youth in the community, and just help everybody out.
And where can we find information about this dinner and about your charity, the 16 Ways Foundation?
You can go to Wesley Woodyard MVP Dinner, eventbrite.com, and that Bright is spelled B-R-I-T-E. And again, that's Wesley Woodyard MVP Dinner dot eventbrite.
Guys, make sure everybody please go to that website. And Wesley, you're a guy who also likes to communicate with the fans. Where can fans communicate with Wesley Woodyard?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You can catch me on Twitter at Woodrow52, that's W-O-O-D-D-R-O-5-2.
Fans, please go check him out. He does respond, and he's a funny guy there on Twitter, so make sure you check him out on Twitter. And Wesley, one more time, give the website for your foundation.
Wesley Woodyard, MVP Dinner, eventbrite.com.
Please check it out. This guy is doing some great things in the community. And Wesley, keep doing those great things in the community.
I will, man. Thanks a lot.
Wesley, it was a pleasure having you, man. We wish you guys nothing but the best of luck moving forward, man. And I'll say one thing about Tim Tebow and you guys, man. It's exciting.
It is exciting, man. I've always been a Tebow fan, so it's good to see him on my team, and he's playing football and having fun.
And that's truly what it's all about. Wesley, again, man, nothing but the best of luck. Stay healthy and have a productive season. Let's do this again, man. Take care.
All right, take care now, anytime.
All right. Wesley Woodyard, linebacker for the Denver Broncos. And Wesley's doing some great things in the community. Has a big dinner coming up in the Denver area. So make sure you go to his website, check it out, and make sure you follow him on Twitter, Woodrow52. Follow him there. He's doing some great things, man. And we wish him nothing but the best of luck. And talking to him, you can – and some people would say, oh, he's not sincere. He's just saying it because of his teammate. But I listened to him. He sounds sincere when he says that Tim Tebow can get it done. I mean, he truly believes that Tim Tebow can get it done, and listening to him, it sounds sincere. It definitely sincere.
I mean, and, Paul, you see, I think a lot of – he's not the first. There are certainly a lot of I think a lot of that team is very much old. Fox said it, you know, you're going to see them doing a lot more. I think that they are sold on his talent, whether you and I and the pundits are, but I think that locker room, and you hear a lot of the same things that they will say is that there's no one better, you know, in the locker room. He is such a great guy to play with, and that was what the knock on him was, you know, coming out of school, was that, or not the knock, the plus on him, is that he is, you know, going to be a great teammate. He's going to be tremendous for a locker room, and he very much looks like, you know, he's held true to form there.
Definitely. I mean, say what you will about the guy, and I'm still not completely sold on Tim Tebow, but what I will say this, there seems to be something about the guy. He's magical. I mean, how do you explain what happened last week, coming back from 15-0? You had the onside kick that they had in that particular game. Onside kicks work, what, about less than 10% of the time. So they got the onside kick, and he let them down the field. They were down 15-0 with 5 minutes to go. 15-0 with 5 minutes to go. And guess what? He let them down the field twice, and they got the victory. So it's you got to give him a lot of credit. And say what you will about the guy, the mechanics don't really look like they're there. They don't look great. And it's not pretty football. It's not pretty. But after last week, you have to argue that it's fairly effective. And so you look at them this week, you have the Broncos going against the Detroit Lions. It is in Denver. But it's going to be a tough game for the Broncos because the Detroit Lions – they're a wounded animal right now, and they're coming off two tough defeats to the Falcons and to the San Francisco 49ers, both at home. So maybe this is what the doctor ordered for the Detroit Lions. They're going on the road in Vesco Field, Mile High Stadium in Denver. So maybe this will help them and get them back on track. But the defense for the Denver Broncos is definitely going to have to step up if the Broncos want to have any type of success. They're going to have to step up. And we'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what happens. But it's going to be tough to stop that offense with Matthew Stafford, Megatron, Calvin Johnson, and those boys. So we'll definitely see what happens. And I'm going to go back to the NBA right now. The games have been canceled for November. David Stern canceled them after their session on Friday, after the negotiation session on Friday. And they're still about $100 million apart annually. So they're still $100 million apart, excuse me. And then, you know, the owners, they want that 50-50 split. The players, they're proposing 52.5%. And you look at it, that's about 4.5% down from what the players had in the last agreement, which was 57%. I mean, it's kind of hard from a player perspective for them to accept a 50-50 split. And looking at it, I mean, you're at 57%. You got 57% last time, and you are going down. You're going down to 52%. So, I mean, you're going down some. I mean, you're going down 4.5%, not some. That's a lot. You're going down 4.5%. But, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. But you said you look at it, and I don't know how it's going to work. I mean, they're still stuck on this basketball-related income, BRI. And
Paul, but here again, and I've been saying this, and this, you say they're stuck on this. I hate to be the bearer of bad news for everyone. What they're stuck on, Paul, you know, is basically for the NBA. I mean, it's revolutionary. I mean, this is huge dollars. This, if anything, really does, I think, overtake the NFL because it's really different. You know, this transitions to a league that has a soft cap and that these players, they can retire and be guaranteed to be paid out huge dollars in contracts, or basically then they're asked to be bought out. I mean, we're not talking, you know, chump change. And for the owners, I think that they are at a point where they have kind of recognized that for their long-term growth and the models that they need to follow, I mean, that has to at some point change. And I think the players in this are recognizing, just like they did in the NFL, and rightly so, may I add, that, you know, they cannot and will not just sit by and watch a huge reduction when the owners, I mean, keep certainly getting richer. The problem for the NBA, though, ultimately long-term, is where players do have to recognize that. I think a soft cap culmination or extinction is almost a foregone conclusion. Whether or not revenue, you know, percentages will diminish or decrease has yet to really, I think, been followed. But I don't think the NBA can sustain itself when you can have a player have an injury and still be on the payroll for 5 years.
And you're totally right about the whole NBA situation. It's definitely a situation that needs to be fixed, and hopefully they will fix it sooner than later. But we're going to go back to the World Series now. We're going to bring in former Major League Baseball outfielder, Mr. Darrell Hamilton. Darrell, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well, doing very well. And Darrell, let's get right down to it. This St. Louis Cardinals teams, and I affectionately call them the St. Louis Cockroaches, because this team could survive a nuclear war. I mean, 10.5 games back in August, 3 games out with 5 to play, down to their final out twice, and back-to-back innings in Game 6. I mean, how improbable is this team in this story?
It's pretty incredible. I mean, I've been watching baseball for a long, long time, and I've never seen anything like this. I mean, first thing they need to do is send a bottle of champagne to the Atlanta Braves, because without the collapse of the Braves, the Cards don't get in. And from then on, I mean, it was pretty incredible watching him every game. I think the neat thing about teams that get into the playoffs as a wild card, and when I played with the Mets, we got in as a wild card, the attitude is a little bit different than a division winner. As a wild card winner, you go in knowing that every game in the month of September was pretty important. So you're almost like you're playing in the playoffs prior to getting into the playoffs. And once you get in, it's almost like a little bit of a relief because at least you have a couple games to play around with. Well, you know if you lose, you're not out of it. So the Cards came in playoffs obviously playing great, and knocking off Philadelphia was something I don't think anybody expected. And then doing the same with the Brewers was something that a little surprising as well. But the fact that they were so close to being out of it in the World Series, one pitch, one strike away, and found a way to come back, I mean, you got to tip your hats. I mean, Tony La Russa, this is probably his best managing job, and that's saying something for a guy who will probably go down as one of the top five managers of all time.
Right, definitely. I mean, the guy knows how to manage, and he showed it throughout this season and in these playoffs. And Darryl, let's go back to the crazy Game 6. I mean, I thought the Cardinals were done after the first two-run lead in the ninth, but they came back, and they did the same in the 10th, and ultimately David Freese with the walk-off home run. Have you seen a World Series game any more crazier than Game 6?
The way that both teams played, no. I was a little surprised that basically the Rangers, to put it in a football term, went into prevent defense. And what I mean by that is, you know, they were giving up, they were playing, outfielders were playing far back as far as not giving up doubles. And, you know, I thought they did that a little too soon. I thought it gave the opportunity for the Cardinals to get some cheap hits, so to speak. And then when they needed to do it with two outs and one strike away from winning it with a guy on first and second, you know, Cruz is not deep enough out in right field to make the play. And there'll be arguments all the way around as far if you're a Texas Rangers fan, because I thought they made a lot of mistakes down the stretch in Game 6. But you got to tip your hats to the Cardinals. They did all they could to get back in this thing, and they won it.
And let's go back to that Cruz play. I mean, you played many years in the outfield, so you know this very well. How
sure.
Makeable of a catch was that?
You know, I don't want to dog the guy out, but you got to make that play. I'm sorry. First of all, you've got to be playing deep to the point where you know the only thing that can hurt you is that guy that's on first base. If he scores, then the game is tied. That's the only guy that can hurt you. And if a guy hits a home run, you tip your hat and say, okay, game's over. But for the most part, if a ball goes over your head, it has to be a home run. You got to be deep enough to where you know, five or six strides away, you're going to catch a ball that's on the wall. And I just thought that he played that ball, he played it horribly, because if you look at the replay, he went back on the ball and he kind of coasted. It's almost like he knew he had it and he didn't realize how hard that ball was hit. You can't let that happen, and not only does it get over his head, but the ball comes all the way back towards the infield. Both runners score. A crazy play, but the fact that the Rangers came back the next inning and scored two more runs and still lose, they're going to be talking about this for a long time down in Dallas.
Well, Dale, put yourself in the outfielders, if you can, because I totally agree with your commentary, but What do you think he was thinking? Do you think that he thought that the ball wasn't hit as hard as it was, as you mentioned?
Yeah, watching him going back, I just don't think he hit it that good. He didn't think he hit it that good. I mean, he went back on it, and it wasn't a sense of urgency to get back to the wall because, like I said, you've got to be playing deep enough, and you got to bust your tail to the wall to know that you can make that catch. And, you know, the last second, he kind of pulled away from the wall. And the ball hits the bottom part of the wall and comes in the infield. You got to make that play. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit tougher being a former outfielder, but I'm sorry. You have got to make that play in that situation.
Was it Buckner-esque?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I'm not going to go here and dog him and saying it wasn't a tough play. It was a tough play. But as an outfielder and someone who's played that position for a while, and knowing the situation, knowing that you have to get back, you have to play deep in that situation, it should not have come to that. I mean, he should have been if you want to look at it this way, he should have been maybe two or three strides away from the wall. I mean, he should have caught that ball coming in, if you want to talk about it that way. There's no way he should have been that far up. No way he should have had that long run to get to the ball, and there's no way he should have missed it.
Well, let me ask you this, Darryl. If this was game seven, was that then, I think, more of the, you know, the Buckner type? Because I really, to me, and Paul and I talked about it earlier, it seems like that was just inexplicable.
Yeah, it was, in my view. But, I mean, to compare it to what happened with Buckner, the one thing, Buckner was moving over towards the ball, and basically the ball went through his legs. And, you know, Buckner wasn't an outstanding fielder in the first place. I mean, Cruz is a pretty good outfielder. But still, I would love to hear his explanation on why he wasn't playing deep enough. I would love to hear if he thought he had the ball all the way, because from my view and from what I saw, it seems like when the ball was hit, he thought he had it like a can of corn. He thought it was an easy play, and it turned out to be a very difficult one.
No, I think that's what we were getting at, and I, when you look at the replays after replay, that's what you, I think you see, is that he totally misjudged the positioning of the ball, and I think also where, you know, he was, I think, in the outfield.
Yeah, and you know, you can look at that play as being one of the reasons the Rangers lost Game 6. You can look at a lot of plays that caused them to lose that game. I mean, you can even question, you know, some of the positioning of players. I mean, you get to the 10th inning, you've got a two-run lead. I mean, I'm questioning, you know, bring your closer back out there. Feliz, he has to go back out there for me, because you bring in Darren Oliver, a left-hander who doesn't throw hard, who is going to face two lefties. And I know a lot of people were saying, well, he brought the lefty in because he's facing first two hitters are lefty. Well, you got to look at the situation here. You've got two left-handed hitters that come to the plate that are not power hitters. They're contact hitters. And with the contact hitters, it's a little bit different when Darren Oliver is facing them. Darren Oliver is not going to strike these guys out. He's not going to blow them away. These guys are going to put the ball in play. So with that being said, why do you have your outfield playing no doubles? They're playing extremely deep to start the inning. What happens? Bloop hit comes in first. Next guy comes up, what happens? Bloop hit goes to left field. All of a sudden, you got two guys on base, nobody out. And I questioned that from the get-go. I was like, I don't understand why you're playing no doubles to start off the inning when nobody's on base. Doesn't make any sense.
We're talking to former Major League outfielder Darryl Hamilton. And Darryl, looking at this whole World Series now and looking at David Fries, I mean, the guy was absolute beast in this whole playoff.
Yes.
I mean, 21 RBI, which is a postseason record. I mean, the guy talked about giving up baseball in high school. I mean, how good was Fries in the playoffs?
Oh, he was unbelievable. I mean, he was the go-to guy, because that's what the Cardinals needed. Because, you know, after Albert Pujols, the first thing any team that faces the Cardinals say to themselves is, let's not let Pujols beat us. Okay, you got that straight. And the Rangers made a mistake. Game two, they pitched to him, three home runs. They said they're done with him. Lance Berkman stepped up. But David Fries, I mean, Fries came through flying colors, because he was a guy that seemed like when the Rangers decided they weren't going to let Pujols or Berkman beat him, Fries came through and beat him in the end.
That he did. I mean, he had a great World Series for the St. Louis Cardinals. And it's kind of fitting for this team, a guy that comes out of essentially nowhere.
Yeah, pretty much. And I tell you what, he's going to be at third base for a while for the Cardinals. I mean, they found their guy. They've been looking for a guy to play third base since Scott Rowan left. And I think they found one now.
And let's look at the Texas Rangers now. I mean, Darryl, back-to-back World Series appearances. Nothing to show for it. Where do the Rangers go from here? You played in Texas for a year. Where do they go from here?
That's a great question. I mean, it's going to be tough for a while, because, you know, you look at it last year when they lost in the World Series, you can argue that the Giants were just a better team. I mean, they had better pitching. They came out and did what they had to do, and the Rangers got caught in a buzzsaw. This year is not the case. I mean, people can still argue that the Rangers are a better team than the Cardinals. It's not going to show, especially with that trophy being in St. Louis now. But I think they've got a lot of soul searching. I mean, their bullpen pitched well early in the playoffs, in the division series, in the league championship. They didn't do anything in the World Series. They couldn't depend on them for anything. And I think that's what they're going to probably have to look at, strengthening their bullpen. They're probably going to lose Wilson. He's going to be a free agent. C.J. Wilson's going to be a free agent. So you don't know if they're going to bring him back or not. You don't know if they can afford to bring him back. But they're going to have to, you know, build from within. I've heard talk that they're going to go after a first baseman. If it's going to be Prince Fielder or who knows, it may be Pujols. But they're going to go after a first baseman and try to bring one in. That obviously will help their offense and defense a little bit as well. But, you know, this is going to sting for a while, and it's going to be interesting to see how this team gathers itself in spring training to, you know, basically, and I hate using choke. I hate that. But they blew this one. They really blew this. I never thought it was going to get to seven games, to be honest. I thought the Rangers were going to win this thing in five.
Well, Darryl, but did they, I mean, I know you hate using it, but let's put you out there on an island. Didn't they choke?
I mean, they had some questionable game planning. They made some dumb mistakes. The one thing that I guess the best way to sum it up is St. Louis Cardinals were trying to win the World Series. The Texas Rangers were trying not to lose the World Series. And there's a huge difference between the two, because one is going all out and doing all they have to. The other team is going all out just to make sure they don't blow it. And the Cardinals took advantage of every mistake that the Rangers made the last two games. They took advantage of it, and that's what a world championship is.
And let's go back to – I want to look at this rule with the All-Star game deciding home field advantage in the World Series. I mean, the Rangers, record-wise, were the better team, and arguably you could say they're the better team, period, but the Cardinals are the champions. But should we revisit this rule?
Well, I think you need to revisit the rule if – it's going to continue to count at the end for a home field advantage. And I say that because, look, I don't have a problem with that if you change the rules and say every team does not need to be represented in the All-Star game. Because if home field advantage is up for grabs with the All-Star game winner, then you have to have 30 of the best players in your league on that team. You cannot say every team needs to be represented. You can't say that so-and-so, we've got one guy here, so we can't bring this guy. No, you get the best players in the league, 30 players in the league, and you put them on an all-star team, and you say, okay, let's go. It's going to count. Best players are out here. Let's go. You can't do it the way they're doing it now by saying every team needs to get represented. Everybody has to more or less play. All these little things that goes with an exhibition game, it can't go into the All-Star game if the All-Star game counts for something.
And I think that's a very fair point. And also, Darryl, looking at it this way, I want to look at the divisional round. And you have the Phillies, a team, and baseball, the regular season means a lot. And you had the Phillies who won 102 games, and they lose in the first round to the Cardinals, five-game series. Should we stretch the five-game series to a seven-game series in the first round?
Well,
because the best team doesn't necessarily win in a five-game series.
Sure, absolutely. And I agree with you on that, they don't. But I think that's the neat thing about the division series, because anything can happen. You know, you get a team like the Phillies who had the best record in baseball. They had everything going for them. But they face a Cardinal team that was hot. And all it takes is one game to turn the tide in a five-game series. And I think we need to stay with that because, you know, if the – the playoffs are getting longer. They're starting a lot later. Weather's going to be a factor once you start getting to league championship and World Series. So I don't know if you're adding a couple more games for that division round is going to fly as far as the commissioner is concerned. But I like the five-game series because it puts pressure on that team that won 102 games to say, look, we know what you did during the regular season. You got to prove it in this first round, and the Phillies couldn't do it.
Right, and that's a fair point.
So, you mentioned, with talk of the Rangers looking at where and who they're going to sign in first base, and you even brought up Pujols' name. Where do you see Pujols? He was asked last night, and he respectively kind of declined. But where do you see him in the offseason?
I would be surprised if he left St. Louis. But with that being said, I'm also surprised at some of the answers he's been given lately. When the media has asked him about it, he's been very, very cordial in saying, I don't want to talk about it. He's been very quiet. He really hadn't said anything about it. And to me, that tells me he is seriously looking somewhere else. So I don't know if it's going to happen. I'd be surprised if it did, but it wouldn't shock me, because I think looking at Albert Pujols and what he's done in St. Louis, there's only one other player in St. Louis Cardinal history that's done something better, and that's Stan the Man. Other than that, Albert Pujols is the guy, and they would be nuts to let him go. But it may not be on the Cardinals to keep him there. He may want to leave. And from listening to him last night and seeing some of the comments he's made, he's thinking about it. He's thinking about it.
And real quickly, Darryl, does winning the World Series, does that affect Pujols' decision either way? Is that a good thing for the Cardinals, or is it kind of a bad thing that they won in terms of Albert Pujols?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think it's a good thing because obviously he was a part of it, and he's got a great taste in his mouth saying that, okay, we won. We didn't have particularly the best team. We go into the season without our best pitcher, Adam Wainwright, but we still win, and that's a testament to the ball club, the management, and, you know, the fans of St. Louis. So he's feeling good about that. But on the other hand, he may be thinking to himself, you know what? I've won two World Championships here. I am the pretty much hits-wise, average, RBIs, I'm the number two guy in St. Louis Cardinals history. I've done a lot here. Maybe it's time for me to move on. So it's kind of a give and take on that. So I don't know his mindset, if he's seriously thinking, you know, this is it, it's time for me to leave. But I tell you what, it's going to be very, very interesting the next couple of months, because we're going to find out, you know, once Pujols goes, then Prince Fielder will go. And once that happens, then I think everything else starts opening up. But there are a lot of question marks that's going to be coming into play this offseason. You know, C.C. Sabathia, he's going to go back to New York. What's going to happen with it? Wilson with the Rangers, who is he going to sign with? I mean, Jimmy Rollins is a free agent this year. You know, so there are a lot of guys that are out there. Jose Reyes, another question mark. So, I mean, there are a lot of guys out there that could end up somewhere else, but I think it all starts with Pujols and his decision on where he wants to go. That'll affect a lot of players in the free agent market.
And we'll definitely see what happens with that whole situation. Darryl, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We enjoyed your insight. It's been a crazy season here in Major League Baseball, and the improbable happened. The St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series. I mean, it's just – I can't believe I'm saying it.
Unbelievable. I'm shocked, and one of my – good buddies, who's a huge Texas Rangers fan. I'm still trying to contact him. I'm hoping he didn't jump off a cliff, because he hadn't sent me another text back saying he's okay. So I'm a little worried of him right now, just like I am about a lot of people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Should we be worried about you, Darryl?
Oh, I'm okay. You know, the good thing about it is that I'm pretty partial, and I played for five teams, so I can complain about a lot of teams that are not winning out there in the league. So I'm fine, though. I think they had a good year, and obviously they wanted to finish on a better note. I'm a little disgusted from Game 6. But other than that, I mean, St. Louis was the hot team. And that's the interesting thing about baseball. That's the part I love about baseball. It's not your record when you go into the playoffs. It's who is the hottest team at that time. And St. Louis Cardinals proved that.
And, Darryl, where can fans connect with Darryl Hamilton?
Well, I do a podcast called Staying Hot with Seth and Bone. We're on iTunes. So go to iTunes, look up Staying Hot with Seth and Bone, and you'll find me.
Sounds good. Darryl, again, greatly appreciate it, man. Let's do this again, and nothing but the best of luck for you.
All right, guys, I enjoyed it. You can take care.
Take care. Darryl Hamilton, former Major League outfielder, and he had some great insight there. Very great insight, and we'll see what happens moving forward with this whole situation with Pujols and everything, but it's improbable. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. But I have to say it again, the St. Louis Cardinals, excuse me, the St. Louis Cockroaches affectionately, are the World Series champions. We want to thank Wesley Woodyard for stopping by. Make sure you support some of the great things he's doing and follow him on Twitter at Woodrow52. Also, we want to thank the great Willie Rope. He's having a good time at Louisiana Tech. Thank him for stopping by. And also, we want to thank Daryl Hamilton for stopping by. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. See you later. Bye.